Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Thursday as we explore Pet Health and Homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck, and Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, author and homeopath Christina Chambreau. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community. I'm speaking with our regular co-host, Dr. Christina Chambreau, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine. And today we're going to be talking about bringing new puppies and kitties into your home at this time of year. And we're going to learn also perhaps maybe even a case study or two from her very large wealth of experience over so many decades taking care of animals using homeopathy. And I want to thank you, Christina, for calling into the line today.
You're welcome. I love doing it.
Oh, good. I'm so happy to hear that.
More people who can learn about the holistic approaches for animals, the happier I am.
Great. Well, we're going to have to just keep doing everything we can, using the social networks, asking people to put the links to these shows on their websites and their blogs, using Twitter, which is really great, posting it on Facebook, sharing with each other. They could even write their own blog about what they've learned by listening to the show. Dr. Ottle, who does the cardiology health, heart health show on Wednesday, has gotten phone calls from physicians and homeopaths all around the world and has helped children in need and adults who have had what I would say possibly incurable diseases, and he has been helping to manage them just through the voice of our radio shows. So I would like to hear the same for folks who have pets and listen to our shows.
Absolutely. That would be wonderful. So there are several places. One place is if people go to my website, My Healthy Animals. I actually have a blog. So in, on the homepage, you can click on the blog. And I infrequently do posts, but the more people that will respond, then I'll start doing even more posts. And then they can also go on Homeopathy World
Community,
and that's where they can get articles on what we've been talking about, as well as downloads of these radio shows.
Right, and there is a link, or if there is not one on this show page, there are links on the show pages that we have been doing together where they can go directly and click over to Homeopathy World Community to your page. Or they can just go to Homeopathy World Community, and on the right-hand side is a beautiful photo of you. Just click that photo, and it'll get all the information.
Wonderful. So there is a lot happening on the internet, and sometimes that's one of the problems, is that people get rather frustrated by how much is out there. Well, what is it that I should do next? Should I do homeopathy, or should I do chiropractic, or what should I do?
Mm-hmm.
Is that you typing, or?
Oh, do you hear me typing?
Yep, really could, just in terms of the recording quality.
I apologize. I will put myself on mute.
There you go. but then we can't hear you comment. You'll have to unmute to do that.
I will do that. So what I was doing good. Right at the moment was actually I went on Twitter during the show, and I said, come one and all, listen to Dr. Chambreau talk about pet health, and if you have a problem, come and ask your question. Get on the live chat. We're waiting for you.
Yep, we talked to a live person last time. And one of the quick, just something somebody can do without a whole lot of experience is I had a wonderful client who I've been working with. Her cat, her cat had some bladder stones or bladder crystals, and so she wanted to switch to a fresh food diet so that she could take care of that. And her veterinarian had come to one of my lectures and was very interested in trying holistic approaches. And so her conventional veterinarian referred her to me, and we've taken care of the bladder problems, and now she's getting ready to move, and she's got a wonderful job opportunity, and so she's putting her house on the market, and because of that, she moved the litter box downstairs and in the basement where it's dustier, and her cat named Big Boy started sneezing. And so she was really concerned about that. She went to the veterinarian, and there was, because there was constant sneezing all night, she gave half a pill of an antihistamine, and it, the cat had a horrible reaction to the antihistamine. You know, normally my clients call me first, but she hasn't quite learned to do that yet. So she did go to the conventional vet first. And the cat, after the antihistamine hissed, had a mouth open, was panting, lethargic, out of it, couldn't lift its head up, was hallucinating. And even the veterinarian said, don't give that again, call Dr. Chambreau. So had she called me first, we might not have done that. But now that's a symptom. Always in the future, anytime this cat is ill, one symptom when you're doing the case taking that we talked about last time, and that we'll continue to talk about every many of the shows, is one of the symptoms for this cat is sensitivity to medicaments or sensitivity to medicines, because even having just one episode of it is enough when it's that strong. So when this cat is 10 years old, we'll pay attention and see if there's any sensitivity to medicament, or if we're choosing between two remedies and one is more sensitive to medicaments and otherwise they're pretty equal, then we'd lean towards, we'd first try the one that's also sensitive to medicaments, even if that's not a current symptom. So here we have the cat still not himself, sneezing, not as much, he's still lethargic, his he rubs his nose with his feet, so that means, you know, when cats do that, they've got something going on with their nose. It's itchy or they're discharging. He's been yawning. He did play a little bit with her, so he was a little better, but she felt that he put his nose against her chest and said, help me. And so we did several things, and the most important thing is rescue remedy. So rescue remedy is 100% safe. You don't need any experts to prescribe it. It's a flower essence. It's not a homeopathic remedy. So therefore, it doesn't have to be carefully prescribed the way homeopathic remedies do. You don't need to know anything to use rescue remedy. Anytime there's anything happening, an illness, a mental illness, a change, upset, a physical, mental, emotional, spiritual problem, take rescue remedy. So we sprayed the rescue remedy around the area of the litter box. She gave it 3 or 4 times a day. And here's what she said. The rescue remedy applications worked like a charm and brought back the old ways and behaviors of Big Boy. It gave him more confidence, and he moved away from being lethargic, sleepy, and not active to all the things he used to be and more. Now, also, we gave, which may have done more than the rescue remedy, you don't know, but it doesn't matter. It's fine to add in rescue remedy to any homeopathic treatment. We also gave Pulsatilla 30C. Even though he was craving heat and cuddling, and Pulsatilla prefers cold, there were still enough symptoms that fit Pulsatilla, and possibly he'd had it in the past, that we did Pulsatilla. We did twice a day for 2 days. And when she gave him the Pulsatilla, she said, it was so amazing to watch the transformation. I actually heard him talking with me. He came over to me and rubbed up against me and gave me much love, as if to say, finally, you helped me deal with this stuffy nose and sneezing. Thank you. It worked within minutes. I didn't get to give him the last treatment, so I did it the next day, and each day I heard less and less sneezing, maybe one a day, and today there's none at all. Wow.
So well, I don't usually think of Pulsatilla for sneezing per se, but you must have seen a bunch of symptoms that told you to look toward that remedy. Maybe we could learn a little bit more about pulsatilla.
Yeah, actually, if you go into the repertory and go into nose, and then you go to sneezing, pulsatilla is a 3 in terms of the grading.
Okay.
Under nose sneezing, and it's.
I usually think of it for creamy type of a discharge, but I don't know that a cat could, that yellow.
Cats can certainly have that, but this is the important thing to know about homeopathy: is that every remedy has thousands and thousands of symptoms. And so although we build up an impression of remedies for a few symptoms, and so we tend to overuse them for those symptoms.
Right.
Pulsatilla, do you think of pulsatilla being thirsty or thirstless?
Usually we consider it a thirstless remedy. And I'm looking up in my repertory as you're speaking, my actual book, not a computer program, under Materia Medica, Kent's Repertory of Homeopathic Materia Medica. And
Kent's Repertory of it does say of the Homeopathic Materia Medica, right?
Yes.
But it's not a Materia Medica, it's the repertory.
It is the repertory, and under the, I have little tabs, and one of them for the nose, it says sneezing, and there's got to be at least 50 to
200 remedies in that.
200 remedies in that. And you're right. Pulsatilla is in black letters, bolded letters.
Right, which means
and
it's a 3.
So I've just learned something new here.
But also, it's just the point, and then if you go to stomach thirsty, go to stomach thirst, and you'll notice that the remedy you think of as being thirstless, pulsatilla, is there. Now, it's only a 1, but it is there for thirst. And if you go to extreme thirst, pulsatilla is still there as a 1. And then you go to thirst during a fever, otherwise known as heat in the old repertory, pulsatilla is now up to a 2. And if you go to small quantities often, pulsatilla is a 1 in a rubric that only has 15 remedies.
And so, that one we usually think about arsenicum, right?
Even though we think that, and it's the only one that's bold. But
and
even
what was
you,
that? What was that rubric again?
Well, the various ones that last one was thirst for small quantities often.
Okay.
Before that was thirst during heat, meaning fever, extreme thirst, and thirst, and it's in all of those.
Okay.
So, yes, we think of it as a thirstless remedy, but it's not. It's all these remedies have both sides to them. Mm-hmm. One thing that's important about pulsatilla is that it's very clingy often, not always. They can actually, it's listed under violent anger.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to understand how it is that it gets angry when it's angry. And it's also good for drug reactions.
Okay.
So that was probably one of the major reasons I gave it. And it was related to prior problems.
Okay.
So I want to spend the rest of the time talking about new puppies and kittens. The most important thing about getting new puppies and kittens at the holidays, the very, very, very most important thing is don't do it.
Okay. People are window shopping now and thinking, singing songs, how much is that puppy in the window? And you're saying, okay, this is not the time.
Absolutely. And why is it not the time? It's not the time because this is a time, what's your house like during Christmas, during the holidays? It's noisy, it's crazy, it's busy, you're out shopping, you're not at home. What do new puppies and kittens need? Quiet, consistency, people that are available every 2 hours to take them outside, low voices.
And not so much stressful.
Exactly. So what new dogs and cats of any age need, whether they're puppies or older, if they're new coming into a house, they don't need to come into the abnormal. They need to come into the normal. They need to come into a house that's ready for them and prepared for them. So there was a just incredible suggestion that I read on a website, and it said that if you're planning on getting an animal for Christmas because they begged and they want it as a Christmas present, what you do is you buy all the things an animal needs and wrap them up as presents. So as they unwrap presents, they don't know if they're getting a dog or a cat or not, but a present they unwrap is Dr. Pitcairn's Natural Health for Dogs and Cats. And they go, a book on dogs. And then the next present is a leash, except the leash is hooked to a harness, not a collar, because no dog should ever be walked on a collar. They should all be walked on harnesses that attach from the chest. And then the next thing they open might be a water bowl or a food bowl. Now, it's important that water bowls and food bowls are not plastic, metal, glass, or ceramic, because plastic, some dogs and cats are allergic to it and develop chin acne because of it, or worse. And so that brings us to actually the most important thing to do when you're getting a new dog or a cat. The most important thing, even maybe if you've had animals before, but you wonder if maybe you could do better, is to research. So during Christmas holidays, when you have a little extra time, rather than potty training a new animal in a stressful environment, do research. If you're, you know, check out kennels and breed rescues if you want a specific type of animal. If you do want a purebred, my page will have on it the link to a wonderful natural breeding group called onaturalcanines.com, A-U, natural, K, digit 9, S.com. And they also link to some great Yahoo groups on raw feeding and vaccinating the least, which we've talked about before. Research, you know, what do you need to have in the house? Some of the things we talked about, bedding, housing, food. Also, where are you going to take this dog or cat? Are you going to take the cat out? Are you going to walk the cat? Are you going to take the cat in a carrier? Are you going to, where's a dog park near you? Where can you walk your dog that's safe? Are you going to put up cat fencing so your cat can go outdoors safely? Are you going to put up dog fencing? Who's next door to you? Are they going to object to a dog? Check out your neighbors. Don't just automatically create a problem in your neighborhood. Talk to people first and maybe get them in on the decision, which could help. Then you want to look at things like, what are you going to feed? What is the best food for a dog or a cat to have? And we've talked about that. We'll talk more about it. There's a lot on my website. More and more is in the media about it. But the bottom line is, would you want to eat chips and dip every day of your life for the rest of your life and never have anything different? Or would you want to eat liver every meal for the rest of your life and never anything different? So what dogs and cats want, what's the best for them, is raw meaty bones and fresh vegetables that are pureed,
and this is for cats.
A variety, absolutely, cats and dogs.
And can you just take 1 minute about the raw meaty bones for cats? Because I would be interested in learning what kinds of bones are safe and how do you provide them. I mean, I can't imagine my cat looking at this huge bone.
Mm-hmm. Well, for dogs or cats, bones need to be the appropriate size for the size of the animal.
Mm-hmm.
You're typing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So if you have a small dog like a Yorkie or a Chihuahua, although I must be surprised at one talk that I gave recently last January here in Baltimore at the Pet Expo, I do a special seminar that people can attend, and people drive from several states away to do that. And one woman had, I think she had Maltese. And those are pretty small dogs. If I were saying what to feed bone-wise for a dog, for a Maltese or a cat, it would be about the same, which would be chicken necks or chicken wings or legs that have been cut up into several pieces. And she said that her Maltese would eat beef rib bones. Those are big. I couldn't imagine a Maltese eating that. So I learn every day that I teach. And I have a friend in Florida who rescues cats, and she has a fenced-in outdoor cat area. And when it's time to feed, she feeds one thigh or one leg, whole leg, skin, bone, muscle, meat, and all, and she sets it down for each cat, and they eat the whole thing. So they're chawing into, you know, big bones. The chicken leg is a pretty big bone. But
maybe you can explain.
When they're
I've
raw.
I've always heard about splintering.
Well, you have to remember, you have to think about where does the concern come from. Anytime somebody tells you don't do something, you need to think about, does this make sense or not? So here's a question for you. In the wild, do dogs and cats pull out a knife and debone their prey before they eat it?
Obviously not.
So therefore, they must be adapted to eat that way. And they are. If you look at their teeth, they have ripping and tearing teeth. They have bone-crunching teeth, a huge set of molars in the back to crunch the bones small enough to swallow. They don't have a row of molars to chew their food. And they don't have the little teeth in the front are good for, like, gnawing the meat off bones that are too big for them to eat. So they're geared to eating bones. Now, in the wild, they don't normally get a chicken bone that has been, the leg has been cooked, and then the meat's been eaten off of it by somebody, and then it's been left out to dry and rot, or to dry out in the sunshine.
Painting a very lovely picture.
Those are the ones that most dogs get into trouble with.
Uh-huh.
When I was lecturing to the Virginia Veterinary Technician Association years ago, I spoke about this, and there was a gasp from the 200 techs in the room. And so I stopped, and I said, how many of you have seen problems with bones? Every hand went up. How many of you know that it was raw bones? Only two hands went up. And one of them was a very, very old dog that went out and ate like a whole deer carcass. So it really wasn't just the bones. It was that this dog just way, way, way overate. So we'll do more about food down the line, but it's amazing what cats and dogs can eat. One person, I can hear again, actually at one of my talks said that her dog would go collect roadkill or drag rotten meat from the woods, deer carcasses and stuff, and was that okay? And he'd never gotten sick, so I said, absolutely, you now have no food bill. So that's, dogs are geared to eat rotten food. Cats, not so much in terms of rotten food. Cats prefer it fairly fresh.
And I was just typing an answer to a question in the chat room today. Someone asked about being confused that felines were carnivores and the only thing they eat is meat, and why would you puree vegetables to feed them? And I was explaining, which you taught me in a previous session, that the felines in the wild are eating smaller prey, which do eat the vegetables, the berries, the leaves, and insects, which now are taken in through their intestines.
Mm-hmm.
And so the digestive tract is carrying those veggies, and the animals, the larger animals will eat that.
So that is true. And once you agree that feeding fresh food is better than feeding processed food, then there's a whole lot of different opinions out there. And I personally am not, I don't feel that any one of those opinions is exactly right. I think different animals need different things. So that's back to keeping a journal on your animal so that you can track to see what's working the best, what's not working the best. So once you're into the fresh food side, I totally agree. There are people, just like for feeding people, there's a lot of different opinions. There's a large group of people who feel that cats don't need any vegetables and certainly don't need any grains, that all they need is raw meaty bones. A lot of cats do totally fine on that. But in the wild, when they're out in the wild, they do sometimes graze. They eat certain herbs. They are eating the digested vegetables sometimes when they eat the intestinal tract of their prey. So it also gives them some other vitamins and minerals, I feel. But I'm fine. I have some people that are just feeding raw meaty bones to their cats, and their cats are fine. Others are pureeing maybe 10% to 20% of their diet is pureed vegetables. Then there are some that are even feeding some grains, which is not the natural diet in the wild, but they feel that because they've been domesticated, they can eat some grains if they're pureed. I feel less, I don't like that quite as well, but still, if the animal, if the cat is healthy doing that, that's fine. And that's why it's important to look at the early warning signs. And it's a key thing when you're getting a new animal, you want to be able to evaluate the health of the animal when you first get the animal so you know what you need to be working on. So again, that's why my journal, the Healthy Animals Journal, helps people do this. And it can be ordered by emailing me, and then we can work it out. Right now it's not available directly, but I can mail it to you.
Well, I can put a link onto HWC to contact you.
Yep. Just send them to my website. There's a page on my website for it.
So just like we do person journals, live journals for us humans, we're going to do it for our pets as well. I have a question about a pet or a cat specifically that has lost most of their teeth.
You would be amazed at how cats and dogs with no teeth can actually, they can't eat big bones, so you can't do the bone part of it, but they can actually chew meat. Hmm. They can take a chunk of meat and chew it. Certainly you can give them chunks of meat that are small enough that they can swallow if they don't want to gum it, but a lot of them will actually gum it. And if you have to, you can use ground meat. Or make a mixture yourself that you grind up that's meat and bones, or buy one of the frozen raw food diets.
So it's best to give them
chicken
and meat that is fresh and not cooked, because this is new information for many people who have not been introduced to this type of food for their pets. And They have a completely different digestive system where they can assimilate the nutrition from the food, that they don't have the same type of chewing the molars that we have, and still they're fine.
Absolutely. And we'll talk more about diet later. We'll do a whole two or three or four sessions on diet because everybody's always interested in that. But I want to add just a few things for people to hear about if they are bringing new animals home. Maybe they're doing it right after the holidays, or maybe they're already committed to getting an animal ahead of time. Maybe the vacation time is the time they do have time at home to spend 2 or 3 weeks while the kids are out of school, and everybody's going to work together to make the transition be good. So some of the things they want to have at home is Rescue Remedy that we talked about, or other emergency flower essences like Green Hope, Spirit Essences, Anaflora, or others. And you also want Walnut, which is a Bach flower, or other companies' transition anxiety and training essences to be available. Walnut is a Bach flower that's available in most health food stores that's good for any kind of transition, whether it's transition into a new home or transition out of this life into another, you know, dying. You want to have homeopathic aconite, arnica, thuja, hypericum, and nux vomica available. You want to have some essential oils, maybe lavender, ginger, peppermint. You might want to have herbal phytomucil for digestive upsets, or some fresh ginger on hand for digestive upsets. And those are things to start learning about. It's also important to start before you get an animal, or if you have one now, take a class in Reiki, R-E-I-K-I, which is a way that you can really help anytime an animal is in pain or shock. You want to offer Reiki and give rescue remedy. Those are the two most important things that people can do. And we'll talk more about Reiki other times. So that's the keys to, and all of these, if you are thinking of getting a new animal, this is there's so much more we can talk about, but this is a beginning anyway. So do your research over the holidays and send us your questions, and we'll be sure that we answer them on these calls. So thanks for those people who called in and or chatted in and asked questions this time. That's wonderful.
Right. So we're just going to we want to end the show on a good note, that we're thinking about and preparing for a new pet in the home in the same way that a parent would be thinking about preparing a new room for a baby, preparing it, putting the paint, getting the furniture. Just it's more of the preparation within the family for new dynamics, new relationships, the change in habits in caring for that new pet and introducing it to young children so that there's not more stress and overwhelm during a time of the year when we already are overstressed trying to manage indoors with less daylight and such. And I want to repeat again that Dr. Christina Chambreau has the Healthy Animals Journal, and if you contact us, we will give you some information on how to get that. We have the 7 Keys to Health radio show, one of our, I think maybe our first show.
First one. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and you can listen to that.
And many other shows.
Introduction. Yeah, we're building up quite a repertoire.
Also, if you're looking for a Christmas present, the Healthy Animals Journal is a wonderful Christmas present to give. On the cover is a frame where you put a picture of your animal. So if you're giving it as a birthday, as a Christmas gift, you can take a picture of your friend or relative's animal and actually put it on the cover already. You stick it through these little holes, and then you can write some things about their animal in the section, in the journal section. So that makes it a very, very special Christmas gift for anyone who wants to work at having their animals be healthier.
That sounds like a nice way to personalize it. Okay, and our next show will be, it's December 1st today. Next week is December 8th. If we are on for a regular 1 o'clock, you'll let us know what the topic is going to be.
Well, what we're going to do is a little more on case-taking. We're still working through those principles and philosophy, but we thought we'd intersperse a few other things. So next week we'll do a case and a little more on case-taking, and then we're going to jump figuring out the remedy, because that's only for homeopathy. Case-taking is for any modality you use, even changing foods. And so what we're going to do next is the results of treatment. So how do animals respond to treatment, cure, palliation, and suppression? So I'll do a brief example of each of those.
Excellent. Okay, I want to thank everyone for listening. Tweet this up, put it on your page, let other people know, share on Facebook, and let's get lots more listeners and talk live and get on the live chat. Until next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Pet Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Brock and Dr. Christina Chambreau. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when show airs, share with friends on Facebook and Twitter, and send in your comments and questions. See you next time!